Good morning. I have tweaked things a little bit this morning. I am more comfortable in a role as a teacher than a preacher, so this will be much more like a lesson than a sermon. I'll have some questions, and if y'all have questions for me, feel free to shout them out or raise your hand, and we'll see how much this feels like school. What I've chosen to talk about this morning is the context of the life of Jesus. We're going to look at different events and people that are either mentioned in the Bible or took place and are not mentioned in the Bible. So we are going to be looking at the context. And the question is, why is context important? So I have a picture here. You can be thinking about it. But let me define context. Context is the circumstances that form the setting for an event, statement, or idea, and in terms of which can be fully understood and assessed. So why is context important? It gives us a broader, fuller sense or understanding of the events of the Bible. There were things that happened in the Bible that are not in the Bible or mentioned in the Bible, but because it was so common and mundane, it's really not filled out in the Bible. And so we can use different archaeological and sources and writings to kind of fill that out. So let me ask you this: this picture, what is it a picture of? Or what is the time? Can anyone give me a time frame that this picture was probably taken in? Well, what makes you say that? Okay. You use context for that. You pulled together the knowledge that you have from before to pull together and correctly identify that it's World War I. Anything else you can tell me? Anyone can tell me about it? Okay. What does that tell you? Okay. Right. And so y'all pulled context together from different things that you've learned over the years and assembled that to be able to identify that. However, there are some pitfalls with context. Not everything follows the norm. And this picture is actually a picture of two men peeling onions, wearing the gas mask to keep from crying. So it is important to keep in mind that while context can fill in things that we don't know, context can sometimes be wrong. And so with that, we are going to move in. We're going to start out by looking at Roman involvement in Judea, particularly Jerusalem, which was the focal point of the area and the time. So Rome, in the form of Pompey, showed up basically first in 63 BC. There was a dynastic struggle between the last remaining truly Judean kings, the end of the Hasmonean dynasty, and Pompey, the triumvir, was asked to intervene. To back up a little bit, Pompey was one-third of the second triumvirate. You may remember that from your reading of Roman history. We're not going to get into it a whole lot, but basically there was three men that ruled jointly in Rome in this point, and Pompey was one of them. A couple years later, what do you know? Pompey gets tied up in his own dynastic war. He's defeated by Julius Caesar, and this is when Julius Caesar comes to power in Rome in 49 BC. Julius Caesar, I'm sure everyone has heard of. He's the guy that invented salads. Julius Caesar appointed Antipater as commissioner of Judea. So I'll put this in right now. There's several Antipaters floating around throughout this. They are different, although often related. That's one of the things that makes studying this period complicated. People reuse the names a lot. And it's really difficult sometimes to keep straight which one did what because they're all the same name. But this is mostly famous because of his son Herod, and also Phasael was another son. They were appointed as tetrarchs or district commissioners. basically administrators over the area. We'll get into a little bit more of what a tetrarch actually is a little bit later. 44 BC, both Caesar, that would be Julius Caesar, and Antipater were assassinated. Two completely separate, unrelated incidents, but they did happen in the same year, which sent both Judea and the Roman Empire at large into a bit of chaos. Herod and Phasael jointly ruled, basically took over their father's role and leadership and continued to rule. However, in Judea, because of this, because of the unrest, a rebellion broke out between Herod and Phasael, and on the other side were some of the descendants of that last Hasmonean king, the Judean king. The Parthians got involved. The Parthians would have been an empire that were, in a lot of ways, similar to the Mongols 1,000 years later. They raided on horseback. They were excellent horsemen. They would have came from lands pretty much immediately east of this area here. And because of that, the Parthians and the Hasmonean descendants were getting the upper hand because they had significantly larger forces. Phasael and the high priest at that time went to a meeting with the Parthian leader to discuss possible peace treaty, and the Parthians broke the truce, captured them. Both were later disposed of. Herod fled Jerusalem and went to Rome to ask for help. At this point, the Senate is still in power in Rome, and apparently Herod made quite an impression. They gave him the title King of the Jews and an army of at least 30,000 men. I should mention, I'm going through this very quickly to give you a broad overview of the history of this period. Then we'll come back and look at some of these people a little more closely. Herod returned to Judea and began retaking the kingdom. This ended with the capture of Jerusalem in 37 BC after a 5-month siege. Herod is actually quite famous as far as a builder, and he started doing quite a lot of building projects. First off, he expanded the walls of Jerusalem to enclose as much as 230 acres within the walls. He also built a fortress in 35 BC and a palace in 23 BC. That fortress was destroyed at some point. We'll look at it later. And it was actually so effectively destroyed that archaeologists still don't know where in Jerusalem it was. They have some ideas, but there is absolutely no archaeological evidence to place it in one spot. In 19 BC, he began what is probably his most famous building project of renovating the temple. This was the second temple built by Zerubbabel and the Jews returning from the Babylonian captivity almost 500 years before. This would have been the time of Nehemiah and some of that stuff. So it was very old. In order to actually honor the Jewish religious laws, he had priests trained as masons and carpenters so that they could do the work without violating the sacred temple grounds. And actually, the modern Wailing Wall in Jerusalem is simply a remnant of a retaining wall built by Herod when he expanded the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount was significantly expanded by Herod. Basically, he filled in some valleys, he built some retaining walls, and significantly expanded the area where the temple existed and where now the Dome of the Rock is in Jerusalem. This entire building project was finished in 10 BC. So, a city of unrest. One of the things that strikes me during the life of Jesus is how much chaos and unrest there actually was in the Jerusalem and the surrounding countryside. Every couple years, it felt like there was a significant rebellion which was put down by the Romans. For instance, in 4 BC, during Passover, Jerusalem rioted and at least 3,000 people were killed. This is probably the same time that Herod died although there is some discussion and disagreement about that with scholars. Within a year, another rebellion led to thousands being killed, and the temple was pillaged. Then in AD 6, so approximately, let's see, I didn't do my math here, 10 years after Herod dies, the territory switches from being a kingdom to being a Roman province governed by a procurator, which was simply, essentially, a governor. 26 AD, Pontius Pilate comes to power, or is appointed procurator, would be an more accurate way to put that. He narrowly averted bloodshed, and this kind of illustrates the hair trigger that the Jews were on. They moved some troops throughout the city, and their standard, you may remember each division of Roman soldiers would have had an eagle standard. Simply, they carried it along with them, and because of where they traveled, it went dangerously close to the temple, and the Jews were on the threshold of violence, and Pontius Pilate wisely shifted some things and literally got it out of there. However, the next year, Pilate removed some of the temple treasures, supposedly to pay for aqueduct repairs. Once again, there was a riot. Many were killed. Ah, yes, Caligula. He's a famous one. Caligula, and the one book I read, I wish I would have written down in my notes what the exact quote was, but it was something along the lines of, Caligula, not having a large measure of either humility or common sense, ordered a huge statue of himself erected within the temple. This is absolutely a graven image. And as you might expect, this led to some serious issues. However, Caligula was assassinated, which kind of diffused the whole situation. With Caligula's death, Judea again became a kingdom under Herod Agrippa, different from the original Herod. During Passover in 48 AD, another riot led to a massacre, and Josephus records that at least 20,000 were killed or trampled. I should talk about Josephus. He is probably the single most excellent source for information from this time period. He was a Jew who took on a Roman lifestyle and basically became a Roman as far as his practices, and he was a historian. He would have lived approximately 100 years after most of these events took place. He wrote several books on the history of the Jews, and as such is kind of considered the source for information about this period. We'll see him mentioned quite a bit. Josephus, he was a historian. So the first Jewish revolt was kicked off by Florus, who was the current Roman procurator. He took 17 talents from the temple treasury, probably to hide his own embezzlement schemes. And that was in 66 AD. As you might expect, the Jews rioted. Florus sent in the troops, and quickly the violence spread throughout the entire city. And basically, for a small time period here, the Romans lost control of Jerusalem itself. Florus asked for help, and the 12th Legion, with extra reinforcements, was dispatched from Antioch. After a month of heavy fighting around the city, as the Romans tried to breach the city walls, for a completely unknown reason, we have no idea what caused this decision, the Romans just turned around and headed home. The Jews, however, were pursuing, and interestingly, in the same pass where Joshua had pursued the five Amorite kings back in the Old Testament, that legion was ambushed and destroyed to the point where the governor was slain and the Jews captured the legion's eagle standard. This is a big deal. Only 15 times throughout history did legions lose their eagle standard. And almost in every case, it kicked off a war with whoever captured it in order to get it back. Almost all of those were recovered. A legion losing a Eagle Standard meant that legion had been completely annihilated. So that kind of gives you an idea of how significant this fighting was at this point. And because of that, over the next 3 years, a Roman army of at least 60,000 pacified the territory. They did leave Jerusalem to last because it was the most heavily defended. Also, to give you an idea of context, coming back to Roman history, Emperor Nero died in 69 AD. So he would have died shortly after this started. Now we're up to 70 AD, an army of 65,000 marched on Jerusalem. The Romans erected siege towers, brought up ballistae and rams, and built a counter wall around the Jerusalem wall to prevent the defenders from obtaining food.